Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to So I Got to Thinking, the weekly Sex and the City podcast where we take the iconic questions of Carrie Bradshaw and apply them to modern life and love. You're listening to My Youth, Juno Dawson, and My Youth, Dylan B. Jones. Hi, Dylan.
Hi, Juno. I was thinking about what you would pick for our intros, and I had a feeling it would be something... It would be those lines from the play. Those were the only lines in the play.
I'm going to do a dramatic reading of Smith's beautiful monologue later, because truly, what a fucking dreadful play that was. If you haven't seen the episode, none of this is making any sense.
No.
This week, we are watching season 6, episode 5, Lights, Camera, Relationship. Which is dreadful.
Bright lights, date city.
Bright lights, date city. And like Carrie's learning annex course, we're back in the theatre.
Yes.
Dylan, do you have a synopsis, a potted synopsis of what happened this week? Mm-hmm.
That's the pot opening.
Thanks.
We still haven't got our shit together to do like a pot sound effect. Maybe we'll do it. We'll do it once before we're done. We'll do it.
Let's
once.
See. Producer Martin, could you add in a pot being open sound effect?
Oh yeah.
Believe in all this conversation as well, so yeah, they can see how ad hoc we are. Kind of.
So we'll leave them. So now here's the sound effect. Okay, amazing.
Amazing, thank you. Technology!
Carrie and Berger are doing a product placement for Prada this week. I think the word Prada is said about 50 times in this episode. Mm-hmm. Crazy. This is when, as we've said before, when we've talked about season 6, like this is when it truly becomes like very materialistic, very like product placement driven. Mm-hmm. We're going to see a lot more of this, I think. Culminating in Jennifer Hudson in the movie screaming, oh my god, my very own, whatever it is, I can't remember the brand.
And that ain't rental. Oh, well, that's when product placement fails, if you can't remember the product. Yeah. And it was a Louis Vuitton.
Pass, oh, Louis Vuitton, so. Yes. Mm. I won't do the impression because, ugh. But yeah, Louis Vuitton. So yeah, Carrie takes Berger to Prada and it raises... his insecurities yet again. I hated him. Oh, he's so bad in this episode. He is so bad. But we'll get to that.
I'd have pushed him off his motorbike, frankly.
Oh my god, pushed him off the Brooklyn Bridge. Samantha takes it upon herself to make a star out of Jerry Jarrod, who from this moment on is now Smith Jarrod, because she renames him, which is a mood. Charlotte, not a huge amount for Charlotte this week. Charlotte is just lamenting being single. And Miranda is trying to pretend that she's not in love with Steve.
Yeah, dear. Yeah. Although it's interesting, even Charlotte, I think there is some stuff to talk about. So let's get into it with fucking Berger. Do you know, it's so interesting watching these episodes back.
Yeah.
They must have known we were going to hate him. And watching this, I really remembered hating him all those years back and just thinking, how long can Carrie eke this out.
Yeah, because she actually, and it's uncharacteristic for her, because she actually, like, I forgot, I knew that he, I remembered he, him being a shit, but I forgot how, like, kind of patient she actually is with him. Like, she puts up with, like, a lot of shit. Like, she actually forgives him in the end for, so when he drives her to the premiere of Smith's play on the motorbike, that's, like, truly the worst bit. But I'm jumping the gun slightly. So it starts with them going to Prada.
They go to Prada, which is also really interesting to me because I can't know now where Prada was at in 2002.
Yeah.
Brands come in and out of their moment, luxury brands. Yeah. You know, like, for example, even in just the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen Gucci go from being just the hottest thing in town. Everybody wanted Gucci. Queues around the block to get into the Gucci store. And now it's considered a little bit, it's a little bit over.
Yeah. You know,
then it was replaced by Balenciaga. Then Balenciaga, are they putting children in bondage gear? So, you know, fashion moments come and go very quickly. And actually, at the moment, Prada is very much having a moment.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it was doing in 2002. So it just feels a little interesting. It was interesting that it features so massively in this episode.
Yeah, and I remember I'm a big fan of Will and Grace, which was around the same time period as season 6 of Sex and the City. And there's an episode in Will and Grace as well, which is about Prada, like Will trying to get hold of some Prada slip-ons. So they clearly did like a big promo push around this around this time period. Yeah, interesting.
And I can't tell you if it was considered lowbrow or selling out or trashy, if they were going for a more accessible, maybe Prada had become seen as a little unattainable, so they were trying to make it seem more attainable.
Yeah.
I don't know. But what I will say is it's just a fucking maroon shirt. I found it very hard to be excited about the maroon shirt.
I own a maroon shirt. In silk. Well, not, it's not silk, but it's silk effect, should we say.
Nice.
And I bought it for £20 from a Chinese fast fashion website, and I wear it to film premieres, and it's great. So you don't need to blow all your, especially when we're in a cozy lives, you don't need to blow your box at Prada.
Although, nor should we be supporting sweatshops. I mean, Dylan B. Jones. I mean, but I mean, so this is a tale as old as time. I wrote a whole novel, Meat Market, available now, about the ethics of fashion.
Mm.
And short of literally making your own clothes,
I mean,
you can't really do right for doing wrong.
I guess like secondhand, like vintage and charity
shops.
Yep. That's 100%.
That is probably the best way to go, reusing, mending.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can tell yourself, and I've literally done this mental gymnastics, which is, you know, if you're paying, let's say that shirt was $400. If you're paying $400 for a Prada shirt, like the shop assistant says, you will wear it forever. But you might not, actually. The button might fall off. And, you know, I've got designer things where I wouldn't wear them now because my body's changed. You know, so it's just kind of...
Yeah.
You know, it's... And as well... You know, I've in my past said, well, presumably these very expensive luxury goods are like more ethically made. Not always.
I mean, there are some cool brands where, like, and the smaller brands where they're literally made like by the hands of the designer whose name is on it, and that's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway.
But it's hard. I think Kering, who is the super group that owns most of the luxury brands in the world, Louis Vuitton, Balenciaga, Gucci. I think Kering are the single biggest polluter when add up all their different things. So yeah, basically, there can be no freedom under capitalism. There. sorry, Kerry. So, although the dress...
I really liked it. The brown
the Prada dress is lovely. I don't know what she's buying it for, because she's just going to wear it to a random night out. She says, let's get dressed up and go for cocktails. I'll wear my new Prada dress.
I think, like, she wears it to the play premiere. But when she buys
it, she
doesn't know.
But she
know.
Didn't know. Yeah, she doesn't know. Yeah.
It's very Carrie, though. Like, oh, I'll just spend however much.
And she didn't know about her advance from France.
At that time,
so yeah,
no.
At that time, yeah. So Carrie has a problem.
Tony at Prada... played by William Abadie. We are in the multiverse because he returns in And Just Like That as Seema's flame.
He looks very different. Like, even knowing that was the same human.
Yeah.
I found it hard to put them together. I wonder if he's had some work. Allegedly.
He might have. He's very, like, clean cut in this one. Whereas in And Just Like That, he's a bit more... He's got a bit of stubble, I think. But still looks... He's still stunning in And Just Like That.
Like, it's weird. He looks the same age.
Yeah. Yes.
That's the weird thing. I think something's happened. And obviously, he's in Emily in Paris as well. Emily in Paris.
He's also Blair Waldorf's dad's French boyfriend in Gossip Girl.
I mean, he gets around. Loving the 6 degrees of HBO for him. Yeah. So let's put all this into context. So, right, we've started in Prada.
Yeah.
It's really cringe. Carrie's like, it hints that she's introducing him to her family, but she's actually taking him to Prada, where the shop assistants know her by name. I mean, although that said, there are branches of Waterstones where they're like, hi, Juno. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just here to look at my own books.
Yeah, but getting recognised as an author in a bookshop is like, that's reasonable, I think.
It's high-key, wanky behaviour, isn't it? But I don't take my boyfriends, like I'm not saying to Max, oh, I'm going to take you to Waterstones where all the staff know who I am. Oh. Like, I don't do that because that would be mortifying. See, she takes him to she takes him to Prada because Carrie is going to carry.
Yeah.
And it opens up a box of horror when they run in to, oh, it's our favourite. It's Amy Sedaris.
That's Courtney.
She's back as Courtney. Fuck him. Just fuck him.
And then at the end when she's like, cute kid. About Bernie.
Yeah. Or is it about Brady?
Oh, could be. I read it to be about
Brady. I read it as Brady.
Oh, she's like,
and then she sees the baby at the end. Yeah.
She's wearing a martini glass necklace, which I really liked.
Mm-hmm. Now let's dive into Jack Berger's publishing contract.
Oh God.
Because let's say for a minute that I'm Jack Berger's literary agent. I have got big issues with this being dropped element.
Right.
Never in my 12 years as a published author have I come across a contract where you are dropped. I don't think that's the thing. We've all heard in the music industry of artists being dropped from a record label. Mm. But with a book, you either sign a one book deal or a two book deal. I mean, whichever deal you sign, there is always the publisher will have the right of first refusal on your next similar work in the same genre.
Okay.
So, for example, right now I'm being published by Harper Voyager. Uh-huh. If I was to write more fantasy, science fiction, or horror, contractually, I have to at least let them read it first.
Oh,
but even then, you can still offer it to other publishers. They've just got to see it first. So I think Jack Berger has signed a real cowboy contract.
I did think, I mean, obviously I don't know as much about it as you, but I did think, like, the book is already written. Carrie has it in her hand, has read it. So, or is this another book after
that? So let's assume that Hurricane Pandora is the one he was contracted for.
Yeah.
Really, if we are in a world where Sex and the City is published in the same world that I'm being published in, all that's happened is Berger got a one-book deal and they're not offering him another book deal. But it's fine, because he is an award-winning, Pulitzer-winning writer. His agent will just take it to a different publishing house.
Oh, right, yeah,
I see. This is really not the end of the world. I mean, what could have happened, what might have happened that we don't know, is it's possible that Berger has submitted his follow-up novel and they have chosen not to publish it. But if he signed a two-book deal, they have to pay him out anyway. So he's going to get paid, you know, if he has delivered a manuscript, he would get that advance payment.
So lazy... research from Michael Patrick King, who wrote the episode. Mm-hmm. Or maybe he knew and he was just like, no one's gonna know. I'm just gonna say that.
Yeah. And it's too complicated to explain in a street-based scene.
Yeah.
Also really harsh that Courtney has lost her job.
Yeah.
Like most books don't turn a profit. Like, yeah. Very, very few books are now. The ones that do pay for everybody. So it's very unlikely. And again, you see, actually, this is very, gosh, ripped from the headlines. Right now, the American publishing industry is having something of a reckoning in that for the first time, most of the big publishing houses, HarperCollins, Simon & Schuster, Penguin Random House, finally, they're unionizing.
Oh, wow.
And for the longest time, editorial staff and like publicity marketing, like staffers at publishing houses, weren't really encouraged to unionize and weren't given the opportunity to unionize. And until very, very recently, I will say, please don't boycott me. I am published by Penguin in the US, not HarperCollins. But basically, HarperCollins staff went on strike for weeks and weeks. Wow. Until they have finally been allowed to unionize. So possibly this is a sign of the times. Courtney was not allowed to be in a union, because also the idea that you would fire editors and because their books haven't been profitable enough is, yeah, bullshit.
Yeah. Also, I guess like the US job market, I guess, is a lot more cutthroat than here. Like in the US, I've always found it insane that you can just fire someone. If, like, at any time, anyone can just get fired. Whereas here, like, once you've been in a job for a while, like, it's pretty hard to fire you.
This is your sign, dear listeners. If you've not joined a union, this is your sign to join a union.
Absolutely.
Join a union.
So
anyway, Courtney, Jack, we're back on track. So yeah, so once again, Jack is a horrid little weenie who cannot handle Carrie's success.
So Carrie buys him the shirt from Prada.
With her advance from France.
Yeah, with her advance from France. She's had a big windfall.
That doesn't make sense either. I can't even get... Again, if her US publisher earns world rights to Sex and the City, she's not getting an advance from France. It's just paying off her US advance until the end of time.
So I have slightly... This is the only interaction between them in this episode where I have slightly mixed feelings. So she was completely... It was lovely of her to buy him the shirt from Prada. Like, that was great. That was lovely. And I know this was before she knew that he'd been dropped. Mm-hmm. By the publisher. But I think even then she knew his book wasn't doing very well. He had said that like the episode before. So I think like it was a faux pas, like putting the check in his face.
She waves
it in his face. Because I was thinking recently actually about, I had a nice windfall recently. And I was very aware of how I told people and who I told.
Moneybags. Tell me about this windfall.
So it was just at work. It was an unexpected, because of things that are happening at work. It was a nice perk. I won't get into it too much. And I was really, I was quite proud of it and really happy about it. And I told a couple of my best friends who I knew weren't having money troubles. Everyone else, and other than that, I was silent, because I'm very aware, particularly at the moment, like a lot of people
lives.
Yeah, I wasn't
100%.
I wasn't going to be posting on Instagram being like, I've just had all this from blah blah blah. So so Carrie, I don't know, she could have been more tactful.
It's tricky. So I mean, similarly, in my old friends, in my main girl group WhatsApp chat, we are being affected financially, and this stretches long before the cost of living crisis. You know, within that group, financial situations changed. The pandemic was a clusterfuck. You know, some of us were self-employed, some of us were furloughed, you know, a real mix of situations in there. And very, very quickly, my best friend and I realized it was not going to be appropriate to talk about our financial successes with the wider group. And that is just, it's reading the room. And I think whichever room you're in, read it right now, because it does feel that Carrie fails spectacularly in that scene.
Yeah.
I mean, It's tricky, isn't it? Because she could have just said, I've got great news. My book has sold in France. How exciting. Le Sexe in La City. You know, kind of, she didn't have to wave the check in his face.
Or she could have just been like, given him the shirt and just been like, I'm good for money right now. So I just thought I'd get that. That's all she needed to say.
It's a bit weird that he did make it really, really clear that he didn't want that shirt.
Yeah,
you know, it's really weird that it's a bit, I mean, dressing your partner is a bit of, that's a whole different faux pas as well, because it's that you shouldn't try to change someone.
Have we already had the moment with Miranda and Steve with the suit where she
a long time ago?
Yeah. It reminded me of that a bit. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, like I wouldn't buy clothes for Max unless he was there with me kind of and was picking things out for himself. It feels also a bit infantilizing somehow, because obviously your mum dresses you as a kid.
Yeah, so yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't even thought of that element of it. But yeah, I wouldn't buy like clothes for... I wouldn't like try and style Chris. Although I would love that.
Oh my God, just for one night, I want to see you style each other.
That'd be amazing.
If you don't know, Dylan and his partner have very different styles. God, they should make a TV show. My God, this is a TV show. Right, I'm pitching this to the world. Couples dress each other for a big night out. Lol. Hilarity
presented,
ensues.
Presented by Dylan and Juno. And then Dylan we take Juno. Them and then we take them out to like an event or something.
Mm-hmm. We take them to the premiere of Full Moon, a new play starring Smith Jarrett. We'll get to that after the break. Yeah. So still with Carrie and Berger. So yeah. He tells her it's fine, he's proud of her. However, then on the night of the aforementioned play red carpet event, he pulls just this dick move of taking his beautifully styled girlfriend to Brooklyn on the motorbike, last seen at the end of season 5. Somebody remembered, oh yeah, Berger has a bike. And he takes her to... He basically... He might as well just get his dick out and piss around Carrie. It's a big willy-waggling contest, which...
Yeah. And this was one of the moments where I was surprised by her, by how tolerant she is of him. When she actually did get on the bike, I was like, oh, what, like... She is really sort of not pandering to him, but really trying to like be open to his like needs and the things that he wants. I wouldn't want fucking helmet hair to a premiere
Absolutely
event either.
Absolutely not. It would have been a flat no meet there. I'm getting in a cab. I think all I can think, and I've been thinking about this over these last couple of weeks where we've been talking about Berger, is I think Carrie really, really likes the idea of Berger.
Yeah, yeah.
And really wants it to work. And I think we've all done that. I'm not going to name names, but long time ago, pre-transition, I was set up by a friend with a hot young lawyer. Oh. And oh my God, how much did I like the idea of being with a hot young lawyer? But it was a fucking disaster. It was an absolute disaster. You know, later on there was a photographer that I dated a couple of times, and I really liked the idea of being like a chic arty couple, author and photographer. But you can't, just because something works visually doesn't mean it works. And I think that's where Carrie's at, where she really, really wants this to work, but actually, despite her best efforts, Berger just keeps being a dickhead.
Yeah, and oh my God, I forgot how awful he was, like, when she gets off the bike and she's really angry because he went really fast, and he, like, gaslights her. He says, like, oh, it wasn't that fast, like, why are you freaking out? Just the works, like, and toxic masculinity because he's trying to prove himself with this bike. It all just, like, his true colours really showed in that scene, I thought. And then when they're about to go into the theatre and he's like, oh, I'll just make everyone miserable if I come in.
The red carpet was excruciating.
Yeah.
I like that the paparazzi was British as well.
We're
notorious for having the worst paparazzi in the world.
In film and TV shows, and rightly so, the asshole journalists and paparazzos are always British, like, oh, give us a smile, love.
Carrie. And again, we get this strange snapshot, and it's something that we've tried to document over the course of 6 seasons. How famous is Carrie Bradshaw? And tonight we get the "I used to be a party girl," which is strange because that hasn't really been a feature. Although then she does get to walk in the New York thingy fashion show.
I really laughed at that line because I said that line knowing it was from Sex and the City, because someone, I was out with a couple of friends who also have as much of an encyclopedic knowledge of Sex and the City as we do, so they got the reference. We were at somewhere in East London and one of the club photographers took a picture of me and I just turned to them and I was like, "I used to be a party girl," and they were like, "Shut up."
I like the idea that Carrie Bradshaw was kind of like her late 80s, early 90s kind of Suzanne Bartsch kind of club kid on the fringes of the club scene.
Yeah, like she maybe
tunnel, goes to limelight.
She maybe like knew RuPaul like at the time.
Yes, yeah. I like to think so, yeah. She's friends with Michelle Visage.
God, imagine that. That'd be a mess.
I think Michelle would not. When Carrie tries to pull lines like, "I bought Vogue, it just fed me more." I like the idea that Michelle going, "Girl, that's an eating disorder. You need help. Don't get between me and my food." Yeah.
In fact, I think Carrie probably needed to be friends with Michelle Visage.
Mm-hmm. "Girl, eat something, not paper." Yeah. Michelle Visage, if you're listening, I love you. So Berg is a big weenie. But then Carrie lies. She covers for Berger. Why? Yeah. Why are you lying? And again, it's because, But then this week, we know, obviously, this week rolls into next week where very early in the episode, Miranda pulls Carrie on. "You need a bit," but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Mm. The takeaway from this episode is Berg is a dick.
Yeah. More to come next week.
So this is a theme, and we'll have a break in a minute. But the question that we're answering this week, let me read it word for word. Mm. Mm-hmm. Are the men of today less threatened by a woman's power, or are they just acting?
Mm.
I think finally we have a really good feminist question.
Yes.
I love that we have like a proper talking point this
week.
Yes,
and one that still can very much be applied to to today.
100%. And I would really, really love listeners to get in touch with us and tell us what they think. Because I do, like Dylan says, I think this is just as relevant. I think we might have moved on a letter in terms of the generation, but I still think, you know, we still live in a world where there is a gender pay gap. It's just been announced this week that the gender pay gap has actually gotten worse. Mm. So it's still true that when everything's averaged out, women are still earning about 80 pence for every pound a man makes.
And I do think there's a lot of, probably a lot of dialogue that goes, in fact, I know there is because I've heard it, dialogue behind closed doors when it's just men. Don't get me wrong, like I think men are a lot better now than they were in the early noughties, but there's a lot of like, when they're not around women, some of the nasty chat and like resentment still goes on.
A couple of weeks ago in the headlines, there was the only female member of staff in an Irish furniture company, a furniture designer being sexually assaulted at Christmas party. Mm. Things haven't really changed. You know, things haven't really changed forever. You know, since emancipation in the 1950s and 60s, you know, women came out of the kitchen and found they were not welcome in the workplace. Mm. And I still think that's somewhat true. Even to this day, there aren't enough female CEOs in FTSE 500 companies. You know, we've had Stella Creasy on this podcast. We've had Alice Beverton Palmer on this podcast.
Mm.
Both campaigning endlessly for government support around childcare so that women are able to have children and then return to work, you know, knowing that they're supported by the system, by the establishment, kind of.
Mm.
It feels like, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Jeremy Hunt announced some new legislation around childcare, but it doesn't nearly go far enough. And actually, you know, very, very quick to say that, you know, people, because obviously not just women can have babies, people who have children are not being incentivized to return to the workplace, because it is cheaper for some parents to not work than it is because childcare is so cripplingly expensive in this country. Mm. And it's, you know, when you have any friends who, you know, spend time in Germany or Scandinavia, where rules around childcare are very, very different.
Yeah.
You know, this is, it's definitely a UK thing. But this is, we're sort of not really answering the question, which is specifically about men being threatened by women's liberation, I guess, by feminism.
Yeah.
And that's what we will get to. So let's have a break, and yes, then we'll get back and we'll talk about Smith and Samantha, because they are the antithesis of Carrie and Berger. So let's take a little break and then we'll get into it.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello. Welcome back to So I Got to Thinking. You join us mid-conversation on Season 6, Episode 5. And we have a really good question this week, which is, are men threatened by women's power or are they just acting? Which this question leads us nicely into
the rebirth
of Jerry Gerrard. Yeah, kind of, I don't know how else to say it. So we got, well, obviously, spoilers, Dylan and I have been referring to him as both Smith and Jerry throughout. So this is the week where Samantha... So it's lovely, actually, because obviously following on from last week, where Samantha almost gets rid of Smith because she's not sexually aroused by his alcoholism. Whereas this week we see them in a much different place. Maybe some time has elapsed. She's really upset because Smith can't fulfil his promise of TGF Friday. Thanks.
I think the character development for Samantha in this storyline is really good and really really convincing. When they're about to have sex, when he starts talking, says that he's like quit his job, and she like looks up and she's like, oh, and she's concerned. So you can see that she does, despite herself, she does care about him, and she's like concerned for him that he's quit his job.
And it speaks really highly of Kim Cattrall's performance that she can move it on from last week. And I think the word is fond. She's obviously really fond of him by this point.
Yes.
And not to mention the fact he looks like a Greek god, which doesn't hurt as well, I'm sure. But
I did love the line because it didn't make any sense. But and also the way that she acted it when she just goes, I'm not usually a fan of the theatre, but get your cock out. It's just like, well, it doesn't even make sense.
But can you remember, this is very of its time, because this was around the time that Nicole Kidman was doing full frontal nudity in the Blue Room in London.
Oh, wow.
And And so I think it was a commentary on how all of a sudden full frontal nudity became like this weird thing in theatre.
The Blue Room and the Blue Moon.
Mm-hmm. Full Moon.
Oh, the Full Moon, is that what it's...
Full Moon, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think. Smith drops on Samantha that he is starring in a teeny tiny little independent off Broadway production.
Yeah.
So off Broadway, it's in Brooklyn. Again, Brooklyn, about a 10-minute train ride from Manhattan, but that's fine. You'd think it was. God, you'd think they were in another country from the way they all carry on. But he's in Full Moon, which. Shall we try and work out what do you think the plot of Full Moon is, Dylan?
I don't think it has a plot. I think it's one of those that's like a, an allegory.
Just vibes. Just 90% vibes. Yeah.
It's like, I imagine it's like a lot of dramatic monologues. It's maybe like 90 minutes long. One of those.
No interval.
No interval.
There's no words more chilling in the English language than 2 hours no interval.
I was going to say, what do we think of, because Samantha hates the theatre.
Mm-hmm.
What do we think of theatre? Are we theatre people?
I once got trapped in a showing of Woman in Black. And I've said on this podcast many times, I'm a IBS girly.
Yes.
And they wouldn't let me out to poo in the middle. And I had to say, I have a health condition. I was literally trapped in Woman in Black.
I think they've changed that. I think you can go out and go to the toilet now, surely.
But there's that veiled threat of you might not be allowed back in.
Yeah.
I'm like, calm down, Nicole.
People
might need the loo.
There was a great article on The Guardian recently about how theatre people are ruining theatre. like theatre audience. There are certain theatre audiences, not all, but certain types of theatre goers who can just fuck off.
I do think it's a hallowed space. So I'm sort of on the fence because when I do go to the theatre, I like putting on like a little nice outfit. Not
yes.
like a ball gown, like, come on. But I always think like I wouldn't wear a trainer to the theatre maybe, you know, unless maybe it's like, I don't know, like very, very sort of like a lo-fi indie vibes kind of. But I don't think people should be, I absolutely don't think people should be making videos on their phone. I don't think people should be taking pictures.
No.
I don't think people should be on their phone. I don't necessarily think people should be eating like smelly hot food in theatres. So I do think it's like, it's a cultural space, you know.
Yeah.
So in some way, I don't think people should be eating a fucking pizza in the Tate Modern either. You know, I think these spaces are about the art. It's not for you to have, you know, an amazing catch up with your friends in the middle of the first act. You know, I don't think people should be necessarily. It's tough because I know some productions encourage you to get up and dance in your seat and stuff.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, I've also been told people have paid £250 to see fucking Hamilton sing the Hamilton song, lady. When I went to see Hamilton and all the fucking girlies were singing along, I was like, I was comped ticket, but I did not get a free ticket to hear you sing this, madam.
I did not write multiple novels so that I could be sent a comp ticket to see this for you talking through it. I saw singing along!
And it's like this with, but I think Hamilton's a cult. There, I've said
yeah.
it. I think Hamilton is a weird cult.
Yeah.
The Hamilton fans, again, just need, it's calm. Down.
I went to, and this leads back to Sex and the City. I feel like we've gone on some tangents this episode, but it's fine.
Welcome to Tangents with Dylan and Juno.
That one person who gets furious when we talk about our lives, they will have stopped.
Sorry.
They will have stopped listening by now, but see ya. My friend is doing a show at the Bolts Festival, which is great. I love the Bolts Festival. But they were, and many of their, not all of their nights, but many of their nights for their show have sold out. And I met them for a catch up the other day, and they were telling me that they are £1,000 out of pocket still, because you have to pay your own. I don't know if everyone has to, but for their particular show, they had to pay their own producer, lighting technician, all the rest of it. And it just reminded me when Smith said that he was only getting paid £30. it's mm-hmm. still like, it's still, and my friend was saying, like, it's just impossible. Unfortunately, you have to have some of your own money if you want to work in fringe theatre these days, because there just isn't the funding because Tories.
Yeah, and true. I mean, I recently saw Travis Alabanza's Sound of the Underground. I don't mind naming Travis Alabanza, because a part of the show is the performers talking about how little take home they're getting. And this was a big show at a big, legit theatre. And that was kind of the point, that it was Sound of the Underground. It was taking smaller cabaret and fringe artists and putting them in a very mainstream venue. It was at the Royal Court.
Yeah.
And even then, the cast, I think they were saying they were getting like £70 a week or something. If you like culture, pay artists.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we can say, and it's true. God, the people who ask me for free fucking books as well. So, yeah. Anyway, Smith is not threatened by the fact that Samantha takes control of his career. So from nothing, Samantha uses her considerable PR witchcraft powers to not only give him a new name, but she gets him in gossip columns. She manages to do some sort of red carpet, sort of press night.
Yeah.
She really works her spell, which is why, and I'm going to take this opportunity to publicly thank all my publicists down the years. If you know who I am, it's because of them. You know, yes, obviously social media has meant we can do our own PR in some ways. But, you know, if you've read about me in The Guardian, if you've seen me on television, if you've heard me on the radio, that's because of a very hardworking, underpaid publicist. Samantha, it's like she has this thing. And she can do it for him, and so she does. And I think that's kind of, you know, it says a lot that Smith lets her.
Yeah, it's nice. Like, nice behaviour from both of them, actually. She's using her skills to help him properly realise his skills, which is really lovely.
Yes.
I love,
which is what you want. Yeah. That's what you want.
Yeah.
Like, I do not expect my partner, my husband, to bring the same skill set to our relationship, you know, or all the same money right now. You know, there might come a day further down the line when Max becomes the main breadwinner, when my books aren't selling as well, or I'm not as in vogue. You know, it should feel fluid, I think. Yeah. The dynamic between Smith and Samantha feels quite fluid.
Yeah.
And you know, the payoff at the end is when Samantha realizes, PR or no PR, he can act.
I love it when Stanford's like, a body like that, or Stanford says something like, a body like that, and he can act, and Samantha's like, who knew?
Who knew? because she's so mesmerised by his willy the first time around. I mean, how big's his dick? But also, she's seen it many times. Yeah. But I love Carrie. Carrie, sex columnist, has to hide behind a programme when a penis comes out. Fuck's sake, Carrie. Like, wow, please give us your tips on sex, the woman who's scared of a penis. The monologue. Shall I see if I can see it? One sec, let's see if I can find it so I can read it to you online. Smith, Gerard's monologue.
What I love about the internet is that this absolutely will be online.
Juno Dawson performs Naked Man in Full Moon. The rain came down, hard, then soft. It hit the grass, green, then wet, wet, so wet. It reminded me of you. You always smelled like the rain. Scene. Thank you. What gubbins, absolute nonsense. I mean, so the play seems to be about a couple of like farmer people, and because they go, my youth, presumably they're flashing back to their youth.
I think Smith represents,
I'm guessing, the younger farmer guy.
Yeah,
and maybe it's talking about how they fell in love.
Yeah,
or something. He apparently is naked throughout, which I'm sure there is an allegorical reason for him being vulnerable or something. Because when he takes his curtain call, he is still naked.
Yeah. What I love is Samantha is, and what is, I don't know, potentially slightly depressing, is Samantha's absolutely right when she says what you need to get people to come to this play is to say that you're naked throughout and people will come. And she's
I don't know what the
right.
Blue Room's about. I don't know what the Blue Room... I know that Nicole Kidman was nude in it. So, and yes, then there was, she is absolutely right.
And then there was Daniel Radcliffe in that...
In Eckers. Yeah. Something about horses?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Miranda?
Yes. Although, well, let's tie off this question.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
other two have nothing to do with this question.
Yes.
So, in the name of research, I asked Max if he was acting at being okay with me being hugely successful, author, boss bitch. And he was like, no, I think it's great. You know, and I great. Wonder if it's a generational thing, because Max is 10 years younger than me. I wonder if my husband was the same age as me, if there would be... I like to think I would have never ended up with a partner who was threatened by my success.
Mm.
And I can't imagine it.
And I think you can detect, one can detect the signs of that fairly early on, that might be a problem. Something I've just thought of, mm-hmm. interesting, when you and Max are at a restaurant, mm-hmm. when it comes to payment, does the wait staff present either you or him with the card machine, or is it noticeably mm. do they go to him like first?
They do, so it's in very subtle body language.
Yes.
So 9 times out of 10 they kind of just sort of plop the little bill down in the middle. I suspect it depends who sort of reaches for it, so it depends where we are. If it's like some stupid fancy restaurant that I've really badgered to go to because I want to see what it's like, then usually I'll pay. If it's somewhere just like mid, then we sort of usually sort of take it in turns.
Yeah.
Like, you get this one, I'll get the cinema tickets, kind of. But still, there is that moment where they come up with the card machine and they kind of tilt it to Max until I sort of reach for my card.
The reason I ask is because it's super interesting when Chris and I go out for meals. A lot of the time, he's the one who gets presented with the card machine. And he presents as, like, bigger and more masculine than me. And I find that really interesting how that happens even in a same-sex couple. That strange, like, thought about... subconscious, I'm sure, from the wait staff, but...
Oh, my God. You're giving financial bottom energy.
I like that as a title. I'm going to put that on my grinder.
mm-hmm. Financial bottom. love that. Loving that. So I think... The answer to the question is it completely depends on the man, because, of course, there is a whole next generation of crazy incels on the internet who think that women have earned too much power and now men are the true victims because men can't do anything and men, you know, if we talk to a woman, we'll be accused of rape. You know, wild, wild, corrosive, toxic bullshit. Read Laura Bates's Men Who Hate Women. I think I've recommended that before. Really chilling book. I think everybody should read it. Mm. So I think there are some men who probably in their day-to-day life pretend to be fine with the emancipation of women, but actually there is a horrible seed of misogyny in them that still thinks, I'm entitled to this, and you are sitting in a space that should be taken up by a man. Because...
Yeah.
Misogyny is still real. I'm not going to sit on this podcast and claim that we've cured misogyny because it's still very, very real.
Mm. I mean, I suppose a nugget of like positivity that we could find in it is that at least for the most part, they do hide it. So that means that misogyny isn't as publicly acceptable as it used to be, which is good.
True. Yeah, that is. I mean, maybe that's something, although sometimes perhaps there's an argument for saying at least when it's out there where you can see it, you can tackle it.
Yeah, true, actually.
But,
yeah.
So actually driving it underground and into those boardrooms where there aren't likely to be many women present isn't ideal. You just like to think that people are having, at the tops of any profession, that people are having those difficult conversations about, you know, how to include more diverse people. But I think it's, this is why it's a really, really good question, because it's not a yes, no one.
Yeah, totally.
I think there are, I think, and I like to think, you know, millennials and Gen Z, you know, coming up, understand that women should be equal to men, non-binary people as well, should have the same opportunities as anybody else.
Yeah.
But sadly, we know when we look at incels, it's a lot of really young guys.
Yeah.
And the issue, what frustrates me is the answer is not women. The answer, you know, the problem is not with feminism or with women. The problem is with men. You know, it feels to me like misogyny. It's a bit like the fact that we always try to bat racism, you know, to people of color and say you need to solve this, when actually the racists don't seem to be doing the heavy lifting. White people need to dismantle racism. And to be honest, I think men need to dismantle misogyny.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway, that got heavy. But let's talk about Miranda first, who is having a cupcake meltdown.
Oh, it was so devastating when she was all like perky helping him. And she was like, oh, these are, you'll be popular in the playground. And he's like, oh no, these are for Debbie. And her face just like changes. And then she like, so Miranda gets stuck making cupcakes for Steve's girlfriend, and then has a meltdown and calls Carrie, which is a very like sweet and emotive scene, I thought. I love when Miranda shows vulnerability, because it's rare, which makes it all that more effective when it does happen.
It is awful as well, because actually Steve hasn't really been so much mentioned the last couple of weeks. Obviously she was dating the curry guy last week. It's really horrible when you think you've made progress and you think maybe you've let somebody go a bit, and then like you have an amazing night together or something, and you're like, oh no, I do still love them.
Oh man,
I still love them.
Oh my God, I can't believe it.
Yeah. We've all been there.
Yeah. And good friending from Carrie, when Carrie's like, step away from the cupcakes, blame the baby, just stop. Like, yeah, she was good there.
Although it does mean Miranda never got to see full moon.
I mean,
dodged a bullet, Miranda. I was gonna say.
Also, I love that. Did you notice she was watching? Did you notice she was watching Changing Rooms?
Yeah, God, she watches some weird British shit, doesn't she? Miranda just loves British television.
But I loved that consistency that she like has a thing for like British TV.
BBC America. She's just all over it. Yeah. So nothing earth shattering. But I do, before we go, I do want to talk about Charlotte, because obviously she had very little to do this week. She's in basically about three scenes. But, and this has passed me by for 25 years, the scene where she is with Anthony in Central Park and he's trying to hook her up with just random passing Jewish people.
Yeah.
Charlotte says something so wild and so out of character that I had not noticed in 25 years. Anthony says, you'll be a sad gal with no mans. And Charlotte, with a flinty expression, says, would that be such a bad thing?
Yeah. I really noticed that as well.
That is coming from Charlotte York McDougal Goldenblatt, who for 6 years, you know, and when we go back to episode one, where, you know, they're having that very first scene as a four at the, in the Chinese restaurant with the drag queen bingo. And Charlotte says, so we're just giving up on love now? We're just giving up on romance? You know, that we've come full circle. And actually we've arrived at a Charlotte who is no longer prepared to accept, you know, better to be single than to be with the wrong man.
Mm.
You know, and that's progression, folks.
It made me think I want a Sliding Doors alternate story. It would have been such an interesting storyline if, like, the rest of that season had been Charlotte deciding, like, right, I'm just going to be single. And she, like, opens her own gallery and, like, that would have been amazing. But, you know, that would have.
And again, that is the big feminist criticism of Sex and the City, which is they only wrapped it up by having them all in a relationship.
Yeah.
I want to see that parallel world, the multiverse of Charlotte, where she's just like, do you know what? I've spent 6 years pouring everything I am into getting married.
Yeah.
What else? What next?
Yeah.
Where she does some artificial insemination. Oh,
yeah. Oh, well.
Well, that was not meant to be. So, because next week, spoilers. But yes, no, I did think, although she doesn't get a lot to do this week, that little moment, that little, just a little breath of, do you know what? It's, you know, and I did, and I as well, I know for a lot of Jewish people as well, the I'm not a fair weather Jew line is a very important line because there is that sort of, the issue that Charlotte does take on a whole faith and a belief system just to marry Harry. But when she was like, did you think I was just going to throw my new beliefs out of the window? And Miranda's like, yes. And she's like, I'm not a fair weather Jew. So I know that line for a lot of Jewish people, that was a very lovely moment as well. So Charlotte's barely in this episode, but actually it is nonetheless an important Charlotte episode.
Mm. Yeah.
Right, this episode is probably one of the longest episodes we've ever done. thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week with one of my favourite episodes. It's Hop, Skip and a Week. And it's an episode that always makes me cry, and we'll get into it. So I'm going to go away, watch the episode and have a lovely, because it will, without fail, I will cry. So I go watch episode 6 and have a lovely cry, and we'll see you same time next week. Bye, bye. For now.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.